He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Glad everyone is with us. Hope you're having a great short week as Memorial Day was on Monday. Hope you enjoyed our Memorial Day edition of the 73rd Hole, breaking down the match that took place on Sunday, as well as the Tiger Slam documentary. If you haven't heard that, go back and give it a listen. Look for us everywhere on social media. 73rd Hole. Search 73rd Hole, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You will find us, follow us, like us on those pages, and take a couple minutes to rate and subscribe this podcast wherever you may be listening. A big shout out to Bushwood Golf and Country Club down in Chickasha, one of our great sponsors here on the show. Really looking forward to the Wachita Valley, this tournament, one of the oldest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. 3 days, individual stroke play. I think I talked my brother-in-law into playing, so that should be good. Don't know what flight he'll be in. He used to play in high school, but he's like 31 now. And he's only twice a year.
Yeah, only a couple of times there. We played that. He's a pretty solid player, probably around the C or D flight range, somewhere
Somewhere
like that. You know, I know David is kind of like what we talked about with Tom Brady. He's kind of the reverse sandbagger, you know, where he wants to play against the good competition. You know, he doesn't want to try to sit back and just try to win easy.
Right. So again, he used to be good. I mean, he was a good player in high school, but, I mean, he doesn't play anymore. When you don't play, it's hard to be good.
And even if he does get in those lower flights, you know, they can bump you after the first two rounds. And one of the good things about the Wachita Valley, too, there's a Calcutta after the first round, too. So not only is there the $15,000 in prize money given out, but there will be the Calcutta as well. So if you decide to play well, there could be a lot of good fortune coming your way.
It's interesting, too, a tournament like that. A lot of guys get in it who haven't played tournament golf in a long time. Tournament golf's different. You get a little different feeling in your hands.
Especially when there's a lot of difference between when you're playing even a two-man, you know, team event, and then by yourself, know, because, and also too, when you know you're not picking up 3-footers, you don't have, like we just mentioned, you don't have a partner to bail you out. You have to play all 18 holes, count every single stroke, take all the penalty strokes that you had, you know, and some people turn, you know, you'll have your friends say, oh yeah, I shot 81, 82 today. And they go out and shoot a tournament, they shot 95, 96. And it can be because they're nervous, or it could be because they actually started counting all their strokes.
Yeah. You know? The biggest difference I found in tournament golf is it's not even so much on the 3-footers. It's on the 15-footer that you leave a foot short instead of giving it a go and trying to make, because you don't want to run it 3 feet by.
Yeah,
you know you ain't getting the 3-footer coming back.
It is a total mindset thing, just like you said, because you have to train your mind to get into the – instead of having, you know, a putt like that, you want to have the confidence of making it as opposed to not 3-putting.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
So it's a hard – For a lot of people, it's a hard mental hurdle to get over, but if you can do that, then you'll lead to more success in that stroke play. But it's such a great event, and, you know, hopefully not only is it such a fun time, but also, too, if you haven't played competitive golf in a while, it rejuvenates those kind of nerves that, you know, if you played any, like, young, you know, sports when you were younger, or even if, you know, it just gives you a certain thrill, you know.
It gets those competitive juices flowing.
Exactly. And, you know, you're normally paired with someone really nice, a lot of fun, especially after the rounds. I can't wait. And luckily, we avoided the rain this week for what it looks like, so we actually can get a little bit of practice in for it.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. It was funny though. I asked him on Monday, I said, when's the last time you played a tournament that was individual stroke play? He's like, he thought about it for a second. He's like, I think high school.
Yeah, he started. So that's over 15 years now.
Yeah. He played in a two-man last summer at Bushwood down in Chickasha. Had a blast, played well. But, yeah, a little different whenever you get a little individual stroke play going. So that's at Bushwood Golf and Country Club in Chickasha, the Wachita Valley, the oldest tournament in the state. I'll be in the field. Taylor will be in the field. If you beat Taylor, you get a 73rd hole hat. Those aren't even made yet, but I'm confident that none of you are going to beat Taylor. So if you do, you get a 73rd hole hat, courtesy of the 73rd hole. So, Taylor, let's dive into some stuff. Yesterday, Rory McIlroy comes out, and this is kind of a big topic in golf. Should the Ryder Cup be held in 2020, or should they postpone it until 2021? Because we don't know what the situation is going to look like as far as having fans on site. And Rory McIlroy, he said yesterday to BBC Sports, said, my personal hunch is that I don't see how it's going to happen, so I do not think that it will happen. I think the majority of players would like to see it pushed back until 2021 so that they can play in front of crowds and have the atmosphere that makes the Ryder Cup so special. The players are the ones that make the Ryder Cup. If they are not on board with it and don't want to play, then there is no Ryder Cup. I see it being pushed back until 2021, and honestly, I think that will be the right call. Taylor, that's the number one player in the world who flat out said, the players are the ones that make the Ryder Cup. If they're not on board, there is no Ryder Cup. So it kind of sounds like Rory saying, schedule whatever you want. I don't know if I'm going to be there. And if I'm not going to be there, you probably ain't having an event.
That he is the leader of that European side. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, you know, it goes into the debate, you know, of like, when should sports come back, you know, because when should fans come back and all this. And one of the reasons I think that while it's all right for the tour to come back as soon as it is, Colonial being the first event, second week of June, I believe. And yeah,
two weeks or three weeks from tomorrow.
Something
tomorrow's
like that.
It's two weeks from tomorrow. We're almost there.
It's almost here. And then we'll be talking about the practice rounds and everything leading up to it. So, I mean, it's going to come even sooner for us than that. But, yeah, you know, if you have someone like Rory who's going out there being the catalyst saying not to do it, I don't see how they're going to do it. But the reason that I see a difference is that, you know, we talk about like the NFL and in the NBA not letting fans in. Well, you know, they play – theirs is a team sport, and it's a team sport all the time, right? I mean, it's a – you know, every game they play is a team. They don't ever do one-on-one horse or anything like that, you know. Golf is, you know, strictly individual, and there's, you know, the President's Cup 1 year, Ryder Cup every other year, you know, and the Ryder Cup is, to especially us U.S. fans, is more impactful than the President's Cup is every year.
We like having our hearts broken, so we like the Ryder Cup.
It's one of those things where you want it so bad, and you're like, this is going to be when we get it, and once a decade at this rate.
At the end of the story from the BBC with Rory's quotes, they remind us, Europe has won 7 out of the past 9 Ryder Cups, including the last event in France in 2018.
Well, here,
7 of 9.
And I know the next Ryder Cup this year, we're supposed to be at Whistling Straits, which actually would, you know, for us U.S. fans, would lead us to say, well, no, we definitely want fans there, you know, because we definitely would want them. But the reason I think, even just not from a fan perspective, is that that is like the one golf event where, like, you can – you know, besides the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale, it's like the only acceptable time when you can boo golfers, you know, or you can root against a player because it's a team thing, you know. And so I think that's why if there is no way for them to get fans there, or if it's still not safe in the world and the environment to get fans there, then I definitely think it shouldn't be done. And then it also poses a tricky question. I know there's a lot of really good players on both sides, the European and the U.S. side, but if there's just a couple players on each side that say they're not coming, like I was reading up on it earlier, they had the most recent postponement of the Ryder Cup was after the September 11 attacks. It was supposed to be
when we went from odd years to even years.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so they were able to make it all work out, so it's definitely something that could be done. You know, obviously it's not right to compare tragedies, but it's just saying that, you know, it has been done in the past, so it can be done again. So I don't see why it couldn't be done in a situation like this. And I was reading up on that, and one of the reasons that they had decided to postpone it was because even before they postponed it, two of the players who are supposed to be on the U.S. team, Phil and Mark Calcavecchia, came out and said that they were not going to travel across because it was – I mean, obviously that was September, and then the September 11th and the Ryder Cup was supposed to be at the end of September, early
October. Yeah, a few weeks later.
I mean, it was way close. I don't think there's any way that could have been done. And so, you know, I think that'll be something. You know, if Rory or even these other international players just put their foot down and say, I'm not coming over, you know, then it's like, then there's probably going to be some politics involved on both sides to say, yeah, let's just go ahead and get this thing postponed, you know. But also, too, you know, maybe if we see, you know, what is the Ryder Cup supposed to be? It's September
25th.
25th. So,
after the U.S. Open.
What deadline do you think they would have for them to cancel and postpone it? Like, how early?
Oh, man, I think it'd have to be – I think the decision has to be made by August 1st.
You think so? So within 2 months.
Accommodations for the tournament.
You would think so.
I mean, you're talking the course, you're talking hotels, you're talking everything, players getting it on their schedule. I think if it's not done by August 1st, it's not feasible.
So that's essentially 2 months from now. So unless something happens drastically in the 2 months with the sport in the sporting world, where either there's either a major major advancement in a vaccine, or if there's just proof that it's all right
for people. Even if we get more advanced testing, where you can test on site and have results in 5 minutes, I think would make a big difference.
Exactly. So if we can just get, you know, in these next 2 months, if we can get some further steps, if we just take baby steps, there's no way that they're going to be able to get fans there. But if there is a way for them to decide that fans are applicable to be there, then I would do it. But even then, they would probably might put a restriction on how many fans can be there, you know.
Probably.
And so that's not something that we want either. So I think for – and you know, too, just like we mentioned earlier, for the U.S., we want every advantage we can get. You know, I mean, we haven't – looking
not
back –
not only do we want every advantage, we need every
advantage. I'm going to go back and look on it. The U.S. has not
– I don't even want to know.
The U.S. has not won a Ryder Cup across the pond since 1993. So that's I was born in 93.
I was born in 92.
They have not since the year I was born, they have not won. U.S. has not won across the pond. So that means that we need every advantage we can get on our soil, because we even lose on our soil sometimes. AKA 2012 when we blew the big lead at Medina. 2000 we brought up 2004. How many ever times when Hal Sutton paired Tiger together? There was another one that we got.
Paired Tiger and Phil together.
Tiger and Phil together. Yeah, exactly. And then. There's even some other years in there that we didn't do so hot. But nevertheless, yeah, you know, we just need all the help we can get. And it just wouldn't do it justice just because of how unique of an event that it is. It is the only time a year that you can actually root against a golfer and it be, you know, somewhat acceptable.
Yeah, acceptable and even encouraged. And here's my thing. I would love to go U.S. Open and Ryder Cup in back-to-back weeks. I think from fans' perspective, just sitting down and watching that caliber of golf in consecutive weeks would be something that pretty much is unmatched. I mean, we don't have majors the week before the Ryder Cup. It would be incredible, absolutely incredible. That being said, I don't think this decision needs to be made now. I think the worst thing golf can do is come out and you know, this week, make a concrete decision about 100% yes or 100% no, the Ryder Cup is being played. I think what you do is you take the next 2 months, you let all the data come in, you see how successful you are at the Colonial and at the Heritage, and you see how successful you are at all these other tournaments, and you really get a feel from the players, because yesterday, that's how Rory felt. In 2 months, Rory might feel different. We might have come a long way since then. It might be going great on the PGA Tour with testing and, you know, having some fans on site. And maybe he decides, you know what? If there is a Ryder Cup, I would play in the Ryder Cup if they hold it this year. So I think the best thing they can do is get as much information as possible and wait as long as they can to make the decision. At some point, the decision is going to have to be made. Either way, I think it'd be great to watch the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup back-to-back. But the Ryder Cup, it would be missing something without fans. I mean, that's a big, big part of it. And it would just, it'd be very, very different. I don't know if I would like it without fans.
I might despise it, in all honesty. Like, I wouldn't even, it would be just hard, because, you know, that's one of the greatest things about watching the tournament, you know, is you hear the, you know, if, you know, like even last time when we got our ass kicked by the Europeans, you know, someone on the U.S. team would miss a putt and you'd hear, oh, yeah, woo! You know, and they, you know, everyone would just go screaming, and you know how excited we were when we finally beat them at Hazeltine in 2016, and you just hear the crowd excitement. I mean, okay, so imagine how much lackluster the Reed Rory match would have been with no crowds.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
yes.
I mean, you know how you know that wouldn't have been anything. There would have been no draw. You know, I mean, someone would have made a long putt, and another guy would have made a putt and went like this. You know, or you know, put a finger over his mouth to. I mean, who, you know, or like even when Reed in 2010 or 2012 when he you know, they lost, but he still did the shh, you know, to like the crowd. You know, who are you gonna shh when there's no crowd?
Right.
You know, so yeah. I mean, I think the Ryder Cup is
like Bubba pumping up the crowd on the first tee.
Yeah, or
is always cool.
Yeah, Boo Weekly in 2008, right, you know, doing the Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yeah.
Ride, you know, ride the.
If he does that by himself and it's quiet out there, he's gonna look like a weirdo.
That would be kind of a boss move, but at the same time, Boo Weekly and sniffed the Ryder Cup team. If he can learn to putt, he might.
I was gonna say, is Boo gonna be on the team this year? Captain's pick, maybe.
You know, it's so funny. We can talk about all these analytics and stuff. If you go back and look, Boo Weekly's one of the best ball strikers to like have ever played the tour. You know, especially iron players.
He doesn't have the touch,
and he's one of the worst putters ever.
No feel.
He was always 190s below on his putting, but that does bring back a good memory, because that was when Anthony Kim was on the team too, and that's one of, I mean, we've won two Ryder Cups since the turn of the century. So I mean, you know, we only have a few
2016, right?
2016 and 2008. So we're in 8 year intervals here. So
8 year intervals. So it ain't time yet.
No, it's
maybe
not.
We need to postpone it.
Exactly. That's fair enough.
You know what we did get in 2018 at France though. I mean, we got an all-time great American Ryder Cup moment in 2018 in France.
Which one was that?
Oh, my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
It lives in infamy now. You know,
Phil the Thrill, baby.
It'll never die. It'll never die. And that's
Phil the Thrill.
That is a very, very, very good point. But, yeah, I'm looking at the results here. We lost 17.5 to 10.5 last Ryder Cup. 17.
Oh, dude, it wasn't
by
close.
7 points. And I mean, you know, some of these, like, we won by six and 26.
Didn't it end when Phil splashed it on the par three, too?
I don't even know if I watched the last day. Because
I think it ended when Phil rinsed it on a par three and needed to win. Like, he was dormy going in the hole, and then he rinsed it. Well, and I mean, Frankie was already in there, like, 15 feet.
I mean, you look at it here. I mean, we won. I mean, we got 10.5 points. So, I mean, there was a lot. We need a lot more points. You know, we go down. I mean, 2006, we got 9.5. In 2004, we had 9.5. Other than that, that was by far the worst performance the U.S. has had in a Ryder Cup. So, I mean, and I think, too, that this, the like we had mentioned before, the crowd just brings out the whole atmosphere of the tournament. And I think that, and also, too, one thing about Whistling Straits is that there's so much land out there and so much room that it can hold a lot of, like, so many people, which would also benefit the U.S. because if we have more U.S. fans out there, you know, the more impact that they can have.
Right. And due to past experiences with the United States players, they'll be more up to date on the rules about whether you can lay your club on the ground in waste areas / bunkers.
Dustin Johnson. Yes.
Who will be on the team.
He should be on the team.
Yes, I think he'll just go up there and just play like you know what because he's just got all those bad memories.
He might. There's a good chance of it.
Just walks on the course and has PTSD.
They played the 2015 PGA there when Jason Day won.
Yeah, when Jason Day won.
I don't know how.
Was that Whistling Straits or was that Aaron Hills?
That was Whistling Straits.
Okay, where did they play Aaron Hills at?
U.S. Open 2017.
Yeah, yeah, big wide fairways.
That was when Koepka won. Yeah, 2017 because DJ won 2016 at U.S. Open at Oakmont. But yeah, 2015 PGA because that was Spieth's golden year where he won the first two.
That's right.
And then he finished top five or third or something in the British Open. Then
he was in the playoff at the British, wasn't he?
No, I don't believe so. No, 2015. No, he wasn't in that one. No, because that was Leishman, Louis, and Zach Johnson.
When was Spieth in the playoff?
I don't think Spieth has lost a playoff in a major.
Never mind. I must have been misremembering.
But nevertheless.
Maybe he was close to the playoff, and that's what I was thinking.
That's probably exactly what. I think he was either one or two off. So, nevertheless, going back.
He needed to hold out on 18, and he nearly did.
That's what it was. Yes. That's what it was. You're exactly right. I'm remembering it back to it now because it was St. Andrew because he was over on the right side, and he had hit over the big hill. So you're exactly right. But 2015, I remember that because that was when Jason Day set the tournament record. And we talked about it. That was when he chunked that shot nine fairway when he was playing some of the best golf the world had ever seen.
Yeah, had 130 in, and then for his third, he had 110 in.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the caddy didn't have to take too many steps off to figure that one out. So I'm going to look up. I want to see how DJ did there. But yeah, so going back to the whole Ryder Cup thing, yeah, I just, you know, to sum all this up, I just don't see, it would just do it so much injustice if they had it there without fans. And not only would it hinder the U.S. team's chances, I just think that it just wouldn't be near as entertaining as it would, and it would be a shame to have to wait another 2 years after that, you know, to see the Ryder Cup. You know, because like we said, the Ryder Cup means a lot more to us U.S. people than the President's Cup does.
Yeah, 2015 DJ... T7 at Whistling Straits. Finished 12 unders. He was 8 shots back of Jason Day, the leader. Also finishing in the top 10 that year, Anirban Lahiri finished T5. George Kutsia finished T7 that year. And Robert Streb, shout out. Shout out Chickasha. Yeah. Robert Streb, T10 that year, minus 11. Tied with Tony Finau. Where he be now?
I love Whistling Straits too. I think it's going to make a great venue for the Ryder Cup whenever they do have it. But I just, like I said, it would, they've already done it before with the, with September 11th. And we've seen like the Olympics have been postponed too. Obviously there's a lot of hurdles that went into that. I don't know what the logistics on it would be, you know, because not only do you have to move, you would have to push the Ryder Cup all the way back, but you'd have to push the venue sites for all the President's Cups back too.
Yeah. You'd basically have to do what they did in 01. You'd have to flip flop even in odd years we'd have to go back to odd years for Ryder Cups and even years for President's Cups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know all the logistics of that. I don't know if, you know, all the venues would have to agree or if maybe some future venues would have to change because of a year. I'm not sure on all that, so I don't. But I from what
can
we've
I pitch
seen,
my big grand idea?
Let's hear it.
2021. So we postponed the Ryder Cup, right? 2021. We play the Ryder Cup in September. We play the President's Cup in October.
Ooh,
they're both on American soil, so it's not like you're making the Americans go to Europe and making the Americans go to Australia.
No, only problem with that is that now you've set it up to where every other year we don't have one, and then every other year we have two.
Well, but I'm saying
so you would play the Ryder Cup the next year,
yes,
after that.
Play
so you
Ryder
would
have Cup Ryder 2 years Cup in a row.
Hmm. Interesting. There could be something.
Food for thought?
That is some food for thought. Yeah, we could look in that, because it's supposed to be at Quail Hollow next year, I believe.
Yes. Yep,
yes. So we would go from Whistling Straits to Quail Hollow, and then we'd have Ryder Cups and back. That would be pretty cool.
How filthy would that be? You'd have separate captains making separate captains' picks for the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup taking place a month apart.
That would be awesome. Well, and I see here Stricker's supposed to be the captain for the U.S. team, and I'm guaranteed they haven't announced a President's Cup captain yet for 2021.
Rumors that Kevin Na making waves with the rumors last week that Tiger's going to be the Ryder Cup captain in 2022.
I saw something about that too. Yeah,
in Italy, I think.
Rome, yes, I did see that. So, 2022.
Tiger,
so
playing captain.
He would be 6'7". What is he not 40? How do we not know?
1975, 730.
So he'd be 45 this year.
Yeah, so he'd be 40, almost 47. So he'd be 46, almost 47.
Jack won 86 Masters at 46. So,
well, and the way Tiger was hitting it the other day, I mean, he's very liable to be competitive well into his 70s.
Maybe 80s.
I mean, he might have 30 years where he can still win majors.
Man, yeah, we love us a Tiger, but man, we might tend to lean on the optimism side more than pessimism, just a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. So, but when it comes to Tiger.
But, you know, we're 2 years away now, maybe 2.5 years away now from, I mean, both of us were talking, we didn't think he'd ever tee it up again.
The little par 3 charity event that he had at, I think it was Blue Jack National down in Houston, where he rinsed a couple in a row from like 100 yards. I was like, oh, dude, this guy can't even swing a golf club.
Yeah, he couldn't swing. There was the Hero World Challenge interview that he had where, I mean, he was either so down on himself or he had taken about 35 painkillers because you couldn't hardly hear what he was saying and his head was slouching so much. So,
and he was basically trying to lower our expectations.
Exactly. I'm just trying to get out of bed and play with my kids, you know, let alone play golf at a high level. And so I think that's why both of us cried our eyes out at the 2019
Masters champ.
But we'll... Well, we can get down Tiger rabbit holes all day, but we'll get back to the Ryder Cup. To sum it all up, if they can't have fans there, just don't have it. And if you have to,
I agree.
Even if you have to have limited fans, don't do it. It needs to be packed house, needs to be done right. I don't know, like I said, I don't know the gist of it. I really like your idea of doing it next year, having back to back Ryder Cups, and then, go from there. That would solve the dating problems and all this. I just, you know, I don't know if, all the logistics and everything, but that would be entertaining. What would be more entertaining? Back to U.S. Open, Ryder Cup back-to-back with no fans, or with fans, Ryder Cup 1 month, President's Cup next month?
With fans, Ryder Cup 1 month, President's Cup next month.
I couldn't agree
100%. Not only are you having the tournaments, but you're going to have the captains making picks from the same pool of players who some may be qualified for the Ryder Cup, some may be qualified for the President's Cup, but... I mean, you're going to have, what, 8 guys that realistically could be captain's picks? Some of them are going to get picked for the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. Some might only get picked for the Ryder Cup or only get picked for the President's Cup. It would be fascinating.
Well, yeah, one thing about that, too, would be interesting is that, you know, because the President's Cup would be after the President's Cup. Right after the Ryder Cup, yes, sorry.
In my theory, yeah.
Yeah, so something like that. So, or either less, whichever one came first or second, you know, would the other picks need to be made in before the other tournament would be finished? Because then you could see how someone did in the four match, you know, and say, oh, well, this guy went 0-3 and didn't win his singles. I'm not picking him, you know, or vice versa. You know, you see.
Which would be a huge advantage for the Americans.
Exactly.
So then whichever is going second, the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, that's side my bitch make you pick captain's pick before.
That's good. That is a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of logistics to it, but I really do like your idea there.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. I'm Colby Powell. That's Taylor Williams. This is the 73rd hole. Glad everyone's with us on this Wednesday. Before we take a break, I want to get into some of the international guys. I know Lee Westwood and Adam Scott. Do you have that pulled up? Because it's going to be interesting to see whenever all this gets started. I think there are going to be some players who basically just use these first few tournaments to sit back and watch as kind of a trial period to see how it goes for the tour and all the guys who travel over and all the guys who play, because obviously there are still places around the world who are fighting this thing a lot more heavily than Oklahoma is. You know, we don't. We're not on the front lines every day. We're not a major populous New York City or LA or something, so we don't see it as firsthand. But, you know, some of these guys are saying that they might not make the trip. So it'll be interesting to see whenever the Colonial kicks off, RBC, you get these few tournaments, you know, no majors until August. So how many guys truly come over and take, you know, quote unquote, the risk of coming over to play in some of these tournaments. But what did Adam Scott and Lee Westwood have to say about coming over in June?
Yeah, so they had essentially mentioned that how they weren't going to come over initially when the tour started. They were going to look more towards, and I believe the only two players I've seen that come out are Scott and Lee Westwood. There may be a couple more international players out there, but the premise is they are currently overseas. They're not in the country, so, you know, they'll have to fly across the pond. And so essentially Adam Scott said, quote, they are being fairly thorough, but my initial reaction was I was surprised it wasn't tighter than it is. What concerns me is dialogue that the tour is hopeful of returning 1 or 2 hour test results. You'd want that in place before competing. And then he goes on to say, the other concern is it seems as a symptomatic person could operate within a tournament. If they're not showing symptoms and I somehow picked it up inside the course and I'm disqualified and I'm now self-isolated in that city for 2 weeks, I'd be annoyed if that happened. I thought you'd start quite tight and loosen those protocols to normal if appropriate. So essentially he's saying that he doesn't think that the testing is going to be strict enough or that the results are going to come back.
Or maybe that the testing won't be advanced enough.
Correct.
Won't be able to get results quick enough. I understand that, but I mean, everyone in the field is going to have to be tested. It's not like there are going to be guys out there who are untested. I'm pretty sure everyone who's on the property is going to have been tested. You know, scorekeepers, caddies.
Media members,
yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone's going to have been tested. So I understand definitely his hesitation. You know, these guys have families. These guys live elsewhere. And if they were to come into contact with someone who's asymptomatic but then tested positive, now you have to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel in Dallas. Well, who wants to be away from their family quarantined for 2 weeks in a hotel in Dallas? Nobody. That sounds miserable. It's again, are you willing to take the risk? Because there is that small chance that could happen. I think most guys will be able to, but if somebody like Adam Scott isn't willing to, you know, I'm not going to get up in arms and blame Adam Scott. Dude's got money. He's got world ranking points. He doesn't need to come over if he doesn't have to.
Well, and I think one thing, too, that was mentioned there was a good point. I hadn't really thought about it because when I had looked at it, I looked at it as just as the player was scared to contact the virus from the tour and just, you know, didn't think it was safe. But from reading what he's saying here, you know, a couple things. One is that he's worried about if he does get tested for it somehow and is positive, not only will he be disqualified from the tournament, but he'll also be self-isolated for 2 weeks. Doesn't sound fun, but also too, one thing about it is that, like we said, these guys are overseas, right? So they're flying, you know, they're going to airport, flying over to another airport, coming in. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to get the virus at the course,
right?
You know, they can get it anywhere else, you know? So all of a sudden they get it while traveling and then they see, you know, they get tested for, then all of a sudden they're isolated in Dallas or Heritage, Myrtle Beach, you know, for 2 weeks.
No question. The tour said that they're going to charter flights for these guys. You'll have to be tested and all this stuff. But, I mean, what about somebody like Adam Scott? If he's coming over from Australia, I mean, the tour isn't charting a flight over from Australia with Adam Scott and Mark Leishman and Cameron Smith on it.
Right.
So, I mean, are these guys flying commercial? I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's...
You can track it on the plane and
someone,
you got problems.
Right. I mean, someone like Adam Scott probably, you know, obviously could probably afford, you know, a lot of times these guys, they don't buy the private jet, they just rent it.
Yeah,
wheels up. Yeah, exactly. So it would be interesting to see if maybe they, you know, contacted all of the, but that is a good point that you make because it's like the international players, you know, maybe some people wouldn't want to come back for the first tournament. They'd come back for the Heritage or whatever.
Right.
Now, so all of a sudden, are you chartering some people over, you know, the second week and the first week? Are you doing them all the first week? And then those first people are just chilling, you know, practicing over here. I mean, you know, what is their schedule like?
I mean,
you know,
and so Scott, Leishman and Smith are going to have to get together in carpool.
Yeah.
In the plane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Plane pool.
Do they get their own lane in the sky? Like a carpool lane? No other traffic at all? No air traffic control?
You know, there's a lot of airplanes, maybe not as much anymore, but there's always a lot of airplanes up in the air, and somehow they always find a way to avoid each other. So I'm sure they have some sort of...
Except at the end of season 2 of Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. You ruined it for everyone, Colby. Dang it.
Yeah, it's been out for a decade plus.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So, but yeah, going back to the testing thing, yeah, I definitely agree with Adam. And also, too, you know, it's not... And that's kind of how I've been throughout this whole virus process. You know, you know, if I get sick, so be it. But if I was the reason that someone in my family got sick, I wouldn't be able to live with myself, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's how...
That's my thing. My grandpa's 89 years old, and, you know, who knows how long he's going to be around. If I get sick, go see my grandpa, and then my grandpa gets sick, I mean, how do I you know, reconcile that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's not my concern's not me. It's older members of my family.
And that's probably how these the tour players are too. You know, with their family members, their kids. You know, I mean, they have so many people that are impactful to them. And I mean, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. I mean, if you're trying to travel across the country right now, you know, it's sketchy. You know, yeah. I mean, no matter what you do, so I mean,
there is some level of risk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's always, but the risk is definitely higher now, and so. You know, I don't think you can bash on players for not wanting to come over and play. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Make your own decision.
I think it was kind of like Rian Gibson said on our podcast, you know, I think there's going to be enough players that are here who want to play to where, you know, it's not – I mean, there's going to be still some people battling for status to get into these tournaments, you know, so I don't
– I think there will be a handful of names that will be missed because they won't play in a few of these events, but I don't think it'll be enough that we're going to be like, oh, my gosh, they shouldn't have started yet. We don't have enough guys to put on a good tournament. No.
That's not going to happen.
We're going to have names.
That's not going to be a problem.
It was like JT revealed the other day on the broadcast, or maybe it was on the No Laying Up podcast after the match, that he is ready for Colonial.
Exactly.
And, so JT's going to be there.
And you know, our podcast, you know, we had Gooch and Rian Gibson, how eager they are, you know, to members to get back out there and play. So, I mean, you know, it's, and, you know, they're not the only ones. You know, Scott Tway said how much Brian Harmon's ready to come back and play, you know. So, I mean, these guys, they're itching for it, you know. So, it's like, I think even these guys across the pond would want to play. I think it's not like they're saying, oh, I'm tired of golf, you know, I don't want to tee it up. I think it's, they're just trying to do a pros, cons list, risk versus reward. And for a lot of these guys, the risk outweighs the reward, and I can't blame them for it. I mean, I would – it'd be – you know, for us over here, if the main tour was in Europe, I know obviously the virus and stuff's different over there than it is here right now. But you know, if you flip-flopped it, you know, I think it'd be hard for the U.S. players to travel overseas right now.
Yeah, I think it'd be much tougher to get into Europe due to some of the more restrictions. I mean, they've had it probably a little tougher over there than we – obviously New York, L.A., places like that. Major hubs have been tough. But, I mean, you look at places like Italy and stuff, that's tough travel, man.
Yeah, well, we just mentioned the 2022 Ryder Cup supposed to be in Rome, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, these are, you know, obviously areas that golf is played and where athletes are. And we've seen the European Tour. They have tournaments all over Europe, Africa, Asia. I mean, everywhere, you know. So, I mean, and we haven't even really talked into the European Tour aspect side of it. But yeah, just for the PGA Tour with the events being over here, I think that if the majors are able to play when they are, which I guess the PGA is supposed to be the first one around the first or second week of
August 6th.
Then
mid-September, and then the Masters, obviously, in November, second weekend of November.
So assuming that the PGA Championship stays, even if it changes venues because it's supposed to be at Harding Park in San Francisco, even if it stays at the same date of August 6th, you know, are these players who are scared, are they still going to avoid the major championships? Are they going to...
That'd be tough.
Are they going to come over a week before and play? But then that's still even a risk possibility. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into this, you know, for these guys. And, you know, I can't... It's hard to sit back and blame someone for a decision that they make like this just because it not only impacts them, but impacts all their loved ones as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. This is the 73rd hole. Get down to Bushwood in Chickasha today. It is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day. Go down and... check it out. Let us know how you play. Last time we went out, Taylor and I both went pretty low. So if you can beat our scores, let us know what you shot. We'll send you a 73rd hole hat. Let us know. Not you, Coach. Coach doesn't get a hat.
No, Coach. Coach is you talk about a sandbagger. What, Coach is...
This is our high school coach.
Our high school coach, yeah. We might share coach a funny Randall. Story with Coach Randall. Yeah, exactly. So
plays there 6 days a week.
And he's over 50, and he should be on the Champions Tour with how good he is. So, I mean,
plays there a minimum of 6 days a week.
He's had the same swing since I was 5 years old, hasn't changed one bit, and hits it just about as flush as he did 15, 20 years ago.
Yep, so. Pretty impressive. Good stuff. Head on down to Bushwood in Chickasha. Have a great time. Tell them the 73rd hole sent you. We're going to take a break. Come back on the other side. What would be good future teams for the match? We'll talk about that and more coming up next here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcrayroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back in, everybody, to the 73rd hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams, rolling along with you on a Wednesday. Having a lot of fun this week. Had the match on Sunday. Obviously, Tiger and Peyton taking down Phil and Tom Brady. But a lot of good stuff. The Brady hole out, the Phil bomb to 3 feet. Tiger just puring it all day long. It was a great match. Tiger Slam documentary Sunday night. Bit of a dud, but still got to see Tiger's Slam in 2000, 2001 with the four majors. So having a good week here and looking ahead to the future of golf. And one thing, the future of golf is potentially more exhibitions like the one we saw on Sunday, the match between Tiger and Peyton, Phil and Tom. So then the question becomes, who would be good teams to team up and have some of these in the future? A lot of celebrities play golf, enjoy it, and it was really fun to watch on Sunday. The atmosphere, everything was great. Watching Tom and Peyton play was great. So, Taylor, let's put some teams together for future editions of the match.
Let's do it. We can go into that, and we can go into some of the kind of the future venues that we'd like to see as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because you know, like we saw, we got to see two great courses this last week that we wouldn't get to see for the tournament, so we can go into some other courses that we'd like to see. As I saw the reason that we brought this topic, I saw a picture on social media somewhere where it was the future match and it was Tiger and Michael Jordan versus Steph Curry and Phil Mickelson. And yes. So that seemed like a pretty good team. So then that kind of gave us the idea to say, you know, what would be some other good matchups, potential matchups that we could see out there.
Yeah. MJ is the obvious celebrity pairing.
That's the clear cut. Even down the list, I think that one that I would like to see at some point would be DJ Wayne Gretzky. They play at the Pro-Am every year.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Do
that. And one thing I was trying to go through and look through all this is that I would like to keep the same, you know, kind of like we did with Peyton and Brady, where it was, you know, they both played football, you know, so you want to keep, you know, the same sport, you know, you would kind of want to do that, you know.
Or I think a young old would be kind of cool.
That would be
like cool. If you paired Steph with, instead of pairing Steph with Phil, let's do Tiger and MJ, because those are, you know, two old, the goats in their sport. Mm-hmm. So let's pair Tiger and MJ, and then let's pair Steph with Rory, JT. I mean, one of these younger guys, Rory, JT, Rom, DJ. Not DJ's boring. Pair him with JT. JT's got that personality.
And Tiger and JT are friends.
Tiger and JT are friends. So I think that to me would be the best pairing of that. Do a young old thing. Tiger MJ against JT Steph. I think that'd be a blast.
That's a really good one too. When I was going through, I was just trying to look up, you know, who are some famous athletes who are also good players too, you know, who would actually, you know,
Tony.
Who?
Tony.
Oh, that's it, who I was getting to right
Tony
there.
Romo.
Tony Romo. He's right there. He's played in a PGA Tour event, as a matter of fact. Played in some web events too, I believe. And so, you know, obviously he's known for being a good player. Go down the list, you know, football players like someone like Larry Fitzgerald, who's obviously won the pro. Yeah. I mean, every time to get him in there.
Give his pops. Larry wants his pops.
Exactly. One thing that would have been fun too, you know, we've already had Brady on, but instead of Peyton Manning would get in there. One of the few guys I saw on there who's a good athlete, who's a plus handicap, is Matt Ryan. So get a
really?
Yeah, get a okay. Brady Matt Ryan type.
Aaron Rodgers can play a little bit too.
He does. He was on there. He was around a four, I think, is what I saw. But Ryan was listed as a plus 1.5 on the list. It was from Golf Digest at the end of January this year. So I mean, it's fairly recent.
Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers would be pretty cool, because those are two guys who are active and playing. You know,
yeah, that would be good. Yeah, that would be a good one. Couple other names that I saw. Let's see, we've been over those. If we want to do a Gretzky DJ thing, so we try to get another hockey player in there. One of the bigger hockey names is Sidney Crosby. He's about a 12 handicap.
Good enough.
Yeah,
good enough. Because, I mean, Gretzky's not an absolute stud.
No, I think he's listed 7.2. So, I mean, there's not too much discrepancy there. And you know, Gretzky, he's probably turned – he's kind of like Brady, you know. He's turning in the good scores.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he doesn't – he's got that competitive nature, you know.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to go lower than a 12.
You know, funny fact here. I need to go back and fact check to see if this is true, but I was listening to some sports radio the other day, and you and me play fantasy sports, so we'd appreciate this. They said that back when if you played fantasy hockey, Wayne Gretzky was so good that he was divided into two players.
Yes, he was.
Because that's how dominant he was, you know, and that's, I mean, could you imagine playing fantasy football and having to draft a running back twice, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
they split him into Gretzky goals and Gretzky assists.
So it'd be like if you had Christian McCaffrey in fantasy football and you had him, you could draft him for only his rushing and only his receiving. That's how dominant Gretzky was.
Is that not just insane? I mean, so but that goes to his nature of how good he is, you know. So that's why he's not the sandbagging type. Real popular sport, not necessarily here, but around the world, soccer and tennis are both, you know, fairly big, you know. So
Federer and Nadal, or do they suck?
I did not see Federer on there. Nadal has a pretty good handicap. He's around the two, is what it said. So he actually hosted, reading here, he hosted some sort of charity golf event under his name. So, you know,
I wish Federer were good because, you know, Federer and Tiger are friends. Mm-hmm. Federer and Nadal
were friends.
Are they not anymore?
The story I heard was that... the story that I heard was that Federer, long story short, got upset with Tiger after the 2010 stuff.
Okay,
because he was an intricate part of getting him and Elin together, because it was kind of through Jesper Parnevik, who was through Federer. It was kind of a web connection here. So they were friends. I don't know if they made up, but at one point they were not friends.
Okay, that makes sense. Because my thought was, Tiger and Federer, you have the righties, and then Phil and Nadal, you have the lefties. So let's do that's righties versus lefties, and these are the goats of their sports. They're all a little bit older. So, yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun.
Are we going to play on a grass golf course or a clay golf course, though?
That's a big contributor for Nadal. If it's on clay, give me Nadal, you can have the field.
No doubt about that. Was he won 10 or 11 French Open or something stupid?
Way too many.
And so we mentioned tennis, going to football. I'm not much big on soccer unless it's the World Cup season. And so the names I saw, and I only saw a couple that I recognized. An older player, Wayne Rooney, who's friends with Rory. So that would be kind of a fun match.
That'd be really good.
He's like a 16 handicap. So you'd have to find someone a little lower. The only other name I recognize on there, really, and I don't even know if he's still a good player, is Gareth Bale. He played on.
Oh, yeah, he's still a really good player.
He played with Ronaldo in Real Madrid, I believe. I don't know if he's still with them, because I know Ronaldo went to Huevas or whatever it's called. And he's around a 5 handicap, you know. So I think that, you know, if you wanted to do like an international one, you know, like we bring out the show, it's Wonderful World of Golf, and maybe some, we'll go into just a little bit some other courses around the world we'd like to see. I think that would be a good international thing, you know, get the soccer players in there and get them teamed up with, you know, obviously Rory would want to do it. I think Lee Westwood and Wayne Rooney are good friends too, you know. So I don't think it'd be hard to get some European tour players to sign up for that, because, you know, they look up to these soccer players like we do our NFL players.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. I want to give credit where credit's due, because I saw this on Twitter this morning from Eddie Radosovich. So a local match, 405 edition. This would be a lot of fun. He gives a couple of potential matches here that we could play. Okay. Ricky and Mike Gundy against AK and Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot about AK, and even in the coming future, we're going to do a player profile over Anthony Kim, just because he's so polarizing around here. If we can drag him out of the cave wherever he's at up in the mountains, we might be able to get him to do it. But yeah, no, that would be extremely, extremely intense.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I think Lincoln Riley is a pretty good player, and I don't think Mike Gundy plays. Right. So I don't think that would work logistically. What about AK and Toby Keith against Ricky Fowler and Garth Brooks?
that would be pretty entertaining.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I don't know how Garth's game is. I know Toby Keith owns a Belmar Golf Club down in Norman Moore area, so obviously he gets to play quite a bit. So yeah, that would be very entertaining there. You know, one thing that one other one that I don't know if it's still on there, but one I saw on here too. Famous quarterbacks at both of our schools, Brandon Weed and Sam Bradford, are both really good
players. Yeah,
both really good players. So I'm sure we could orchestrate something around that. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, AK is kind of the big, you know, big OU name out there. But I mean,
who's the best OU golfer on tour right now? Answer.
I'm sure. I'm sorry.
Abraham Answer.
It has to be Answer. Yeah, definitely. Michael Gellerman is out there. Charlie Saxon's almost out there. One of my good friends from the past. And they've got a lot more up and comers coming up too. So I mean, you'll have OSU has a little bit more options to choose from. You know, especially with some of the newer guys. You know, like Hovland, Wolf, and even you know, Ricky, and then even guys in between there, Alex Noren, who was before them, Charles Howe. But so yeah, there's a lot of potential matchups for a local feel. You know, which is where, you know, maybe we could do something for. You know, that wouldn't necessarily draw the national crowd this match did, but this would be like raise money for an Oklahoma foundation or something like that. So that would be really cool. Yeah. So no, those are two guys on my list who just so happen to be from the state.
Also, here's my hot take. They should do 18 of modified alternate shot, because it was way more entertaining than the best ball.
Well, I thought
the best ball was kind of dry, and the modified alternate shot was like every shot was intense.
I was thinking about this the other night. And we had talked about this other format too. This is what I would like to see. I think 1-9 should be the modified alternate shot like we saw. And then the other 9 should be format we talked about called Chapman. And for anyone who hasn't heard this format, essentially how it works is that every player tees off, just like the modified alternate shot. But then the other player goes and hit the other person's drive. So like in this past match, Tiger would have to go hit Peyton's drive and Peyton would go hit Tiger's drive. And then they would play alternate shot. They would pick the best shot after the second shot and then play alternate shot from then there. And I think that would be very interesting because then, you know, like we saw Tom was in the shit a lot, you know, and Peyton on the back was hitting it in some spots. So it would have been interesting to see those pros have to get out of those tough situations and then they would be able to go from there because that would also get some more kind of creativity into it. And because then also too, if you know, that way it's not just so single-minded as to like, oh, we definitely want so-and-so hitting the second shot, kind of like it was, you know, you always wanted the pro hitting the modified alternate shot. You know, this would be able to kind of mix it up. We'd see the pros in some spots that we hardly don't see them very often. Phil's kind of obscure because he's always all over the place. But we'd see these pros hit from some spots that wouldn't seem very, very friendly, you know, so I think that would be a very fun format to see. And but I definitely like the modified alternate shot. The best ball was pretty redundant, just because I know a couple players got strokes on some holes, but and one of them it mattered because Peyton on a par three hit it close and Phil thought they were going to win with birdie. And
yeah, that was the eighth hole,
that's right. Yeah. Yep, eighth hole. Yeah, so while
Phil made the birdie for the half,
he did. Yeah so I mean, you know, it's not necessarily just straight pointless because it's not like the amateur can't help. Like you mentioned, it wasn't as entertaining, and also it takes way longer. You know, it seems to take a long, long ass time. And so I think that it would condense the time down a little bit. And I think, like I said, I think that Chapman format would be really entertaining to see where some, you know, obviously those, because what would be, you know, if Tiger's having hit a punch shot through the trees and hook it around, and then all of a sudden, but Peyton Manning's in the fairway and he chunks or misses the green, you know, then they don't have, you know, necessarily the best option to choose from, you know, so I think that would, I just think it'd be a cool thing to see and something that, you know, not even, we don't get to see it obviously, but I haven't even played in a lot of tournaments with that format that, you know, it'd be really fun.
Yeah. And they could do, if they did a few of these, they could experiment with them a little bit. I don't think we need like one a month or anything like that. I think that would be overkill. I think maybe once or twice a year you do something like this. Keep it fun for everybody. Don't wear everybody out on it, but once or twice a year, do it and have fun with it.
Well, one thing too is that I think that I don't think it'd be out of the realm of possibility to do two of them. You know, do either not. You don't necessarily have to do back to back groups, but you could do like maybe a morning one and a late one, or I mean, you know, you could just. You just don't have to separate it each single day, you know, or each month, you know. Like you could put, you know,
back to back groups. I think would be pretty cool. Yeah, or maybe you tee out, you let the first group get to like number four, and then let the other group go off, so nobody ever has to wait.
Yeah,
something like that.
And so that would. You know, obviously that would eliminate a couple of things, you know, like we saw Tiger, you know, essentially Tiger and Peyton were trying to give Brady and Phil putts and stuff to make the match go longer, you know, so this would give some incentive to, you know, just play good, you know, because even if you finish early, there's another match to watch, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So that would make it more true as opposed to, you know, because, I mean, obviously, you know, we love seeing it go to 18 and it was definitely entertaining, but, you know, you don't want to be given 8 to 10 footers in the middle of the round just to keep it going, you know, that's not right, you know, that's not how it should be. So I think that would definitely make it entertaining. And even if you want to go outside of the match, you know, for like a Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, like we talk about where it's always been one-on-one, you know, I mean, you know, think of something like UFC who has fight nights, you know, and there's 11 matchups, you know, so.
Yeah, have an undercard that leads up to Tiger Rory.
Exactly. There you go, right there. You know, you could do something like that. Going into, are there any other teams that you would like to see? I've kind of hit on just about all of them that would make most sense to me.
No other teams I'd like to. The only other team I want to see is the McRae Roofing team pulling up at my front door whenever I need a new roof. Storm season is here in the state of Oklahoma. It's been a little light so far, but there's been a lot of hail around the state, so make sure that you have McRae Roofing on your radar. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and Exteriors. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, friend of the show here on the 73rd hole and the owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. He wants to give you a beautiful roof that complements your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Give McRae Roofing a call today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Come. Taylor, one big thing that came away on Sunday was the production of what we watched on Sunday. The production, Charles Barkley, Justin Thomas was phenomenal. I'd love to see your fat ass dunk a basketball, Chuck. Just, I mean, they had a lot of fun with it. So now we really have to ask ourselves, what can we do? What should we take away from Sunday? What worked Sunday that maybe wouldn't work for a PGA Tour event, you know, major championships on the line, stuff like this, to improve the product that we're getting at home as viewers?
I think there's a lot that could be done. Like we had mentioned on our last show how much the better the TNT broadcast was than the NBC. And I mean, even before golf got canceled, we had brought up how CBS was getting scrutinized for their coverage on some of the events early in the year. So there's a lot that can be done. And we were talking right before the show started because we had looked up how frustrated we were at just the fact that once golf does come back at the Colonial, they're doing, well, what was the time? They're doing the pregame show or whatever.
So pretty much, you're only going to have PGA Tour Live featured groups until 4 o'clock Eastern on that Thursday. So 3 o'clock our time here in the Central Time Zone where the tournament's being played. But it's the return to sports in America. Nothing else is happening. People are starving for golf. And you can't make an exception for whatever rights contract you have. We can't get the heads of these companies in a room together or on a Zoom together, I should say, and figure this thing out where we can get more golf. I mean, half the field's going to have their rounds fully completed before we even get the actual coverage on. We're going to have PGA Tour Live feature groups, but that ain't the same. There's going to be stuff happening all over the golf course that we're not going to see for the first 8 hours of the day. Drives me nuts.
And this has been a problem ever since golf coverage has been around, unfortunately. You know, kind of very similar to like the Masters change around the turn of the century where they would only show the back nine or whatever. And then all of a sudden they turn their knobs on how they're playing, show all the holes. And then even 10 years later, they featured the course in the video game, you know. So if you had told Augusta 30 years ago that would have happened, you know, they would have laughed at you, you know, because they're like, we're so private, exclusive, blah, blah, blah. And I think that, you know, while it's not the same aspect, I think we're transitioning into that for a couple of reasons. One, just how much easier technology is, which kind of makes it frustrating, you know, to think about it now when, you know, I mean, obviously they're out there because you have tee time starting at 7 a.m. and, you know, guys are finishing it. And, it, you know, it's going from what would be 4 to 7 Eastern time. There's going to be, even when that ends, there's still going to be people on the course. You know, because, I mean, people are, you know, so yeah, it's...
at 6 o'clock Central, they'll play. I mean, it's going to be a full field of 100 and however many guys. They're going to play till nearly dark. They'll play till 8 o'clock Central, and coverage is going to be over at 6.
So, yeah, so if you play... So if you're playing a whole day, what is that over... You're looking at over 12 hours, 13 hours probably, from 7 to 9, maybe even 14 hours of coverage, or of golf being played. And we're going to get official coverage for 3 of those.
3!
And then featured group for 2 hours, is that right? Or was it...
Featured group will be for 3 or 4 hours, so we will have a full featured group before the coverage, but...
But the featured group
is
what,
the principle of the thing.
Is it two? It's only one featured group, right?
I think it'll be 2 threesomes.
So we'll see 6 players.
Yeah, so we're going to see 6 players for the majority of the day. We'll have full coverage for 3 hours. I mean, imagine if the NBA comes back and the first game that comes back for the NBA, they hop in live at the top of the 4th quarter.
Oh, my God. Oh, I mean,
what are we doing, golf? Figure it out.
And it's... Obviously, there's logistics to it that make everything so complicated. I think that, you know, because you have, you know, like PGA Tour Live is supposed to be able to do it for so long, and then NBC Golf Channel has it for so long, and then Colonial, I believe, is normally on CBS on the weekend. I don't know if that's where it is this year, but nevertheless, it just goes to show there's a lot of different networks and a lot of different rights competing for this, you know, so they can't necessarily find a happy medium. And you know, whenever
it is CBS,
okay. So, and one thing you'll notice too, it's not as bad as it was when it first started, but whenever you'd be watching the Golf Channel on a weekend and then there'd be a 30-minute gap and then it would go to the CBS coverage or whatever.
No coverage gap anymore.
Yeah, they were able to fix that. But the reason they did was because they had to change all the crews out, the camera crews and everything, because they were two entirely different entities, you know? You know, so that was the main thing behind that. And so I think you just have, you know, all these different companies and stuff competing for these rights and to, you know, to get it right. And it is a little different than basketball just because, you know, like Tuesday night or Thursday night we'll watch it on TNT and then Friday night we'll watch it on ESPN. Or even like on, Martin Luther King Day or Christmas when they play all the games, you know, in a day. You know, one morning game in the morning will be on ESPN, then it'll be on ABC, and then another network at night, you know, or whatever. So it's a little different in that aspect. But at the same time, you know, it's like it's – first of all, these are unprecedented times. This is going to be the first tournament we've had, first full tournament we've had since the Bay Hill.
The first full tournament. Yeah, was that the week before the players?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to figure out which one was before then.
We got the Friday 60 – or the Thursday 62 from Hideki? 63 from Hideki at the players. But, yeah, it's the last golf we've seen.
Last full tournament we've seen was Bay Hill, and so that was back in March.
That was old Tyrrell Hatton, right?
Tyrrell Hatton, yeah. Four under one. So my point I was trying to make there is we're 4 months away or 4 months behind or whatever it is now on – or 3 months on competitive golf and it not being here. You know, why can – first of all, why can we not expose it more for everyone, you know, because of these times? But then also, why can't it be better, you know, going forward? Why can we not just show more, I guess, have more rights than they do? And you know, one of the things that can be frustrating, like when you're watching PGA Tour live, and like you said, you'll see the same six players over and over and over, and then they'll show the leaderboard, and then all of a sudden there's like three players who are at the top now that you weren't even, because they're not showing them, you know, and they're like, oh, so-and-so just eagled this hole, but they can't show it. And it's like, why? You know, why not? Why can't we see that? You know,
yeah,
why
it's
can't...
the only sport.
Yeah.
It's the only sport where, because of the way the contracts work, and I understand that golf plays all day, sun up to sundown, and other sports don't do that. Other sports play in 3-hour windows. Still, it's the only sport where we don't get to see it all.
And I mean, I have some friends that are tennis entrepreneurs, and I'm not extremely fluent in that, but I'm pretty sure that even for most tournaments, you know, like when, you know, like Wimbledon, they'll be hosting multiple matches at a time. I know it's not being held this year, but it's just to make the point. You know, you can go in and you can watch any match you want, you know, on a stream, you know, or you know, they'll have
online, not necessarily live on ESPN. They kind of cut to big moments and big matches, and then they'll have the marquee match that they play. Mm. But yeah, you can go online and find the stream for any match you want to watch. Which you can't do for golf.
No, you can't. No, if you want to, like we've talked about with Kelsey so many times on the podcast, it's just, you know, he'll be, when he's trying to watch Taylor, you know, he's hitting refresh on the shot link the whole time because that's the only way he can view it, you know? And I mean, obviously, you know, it's hard to video every single shot from 150 players every week, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's a little, you know, it's not like we're asking for every shot to be televised here and for, you know, to be able to see every single, you know, have a pro tracer on every shot, you know. It's not like we're asking for that. We're just, you know, if we, and one thing, too, that would extremely, extremely frustrate me would be, like, for example, we mentioned that the coverage will end while golf is still being played, right? You know, more than like, there's no doubt about it with how slow
it will. Yeah.
So it's ending at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock our time. There will definitely still be people on the course. And I cannot tell you how many times I've been watching the Golf Channel and they will, like right after the golf's done, they'll restart the covers that they already played. And they'll be showing old highlights of covers they already played with golfers who are still on the freaking course.
Yes.
Why? Why?
Yeah. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense why the contracts are structured the way they are.
It's bad for the tour.
It's bad for the tour. It's bad for the viewer. I mean, it's bad for everybody. So I hate that they do it that way. Another big thing that I came away with on Sunday was, now again, you'd have to get the players to agree to this, and who knows if they would, who knows how many would, but even if a select few would agree to wear mics on the course, or, you know, maybe you even mic up a caddy, you mic up the golf bag, and we get more player caddy conversations, just more conversation throughout the day. You know, even if you could get a player to agree to, you know, in between shots, you know, once or twice around, throw an earpiece in, and you can talk to Faldo in the booth, and Faldo, that would do so much for golf coverage. And I don't know if we can get there, because again, I don't know if the players will agree to it, but that was so special and unique on Sunday. And the ability for everyone who was out there, broadcasters and players, to be able to communicate with each other, I thought made that broadcast.
It definitely did. And you know, like we had made the comment about, you know, Brady's mic falling off because it was that big clunky thing, you know. So it might be hard to get players to want to do that because it could interfere with their swing, you know. But also, too, you know, if you can find some way to kind of dose that down, make it into a micro version, I think a lot of players would want to do it because it – it can grow their brand, you know, because people can find them funny, find them entertaining. So then all of a sudden, you know, more people are attracted to them by
Like Taylor Gooch, who we've had on. I mean, if he were mic'd up and got to talk to the announcers and stuff throughout around, how much would that, you know, skyrocket his name in the golf world if he were one of the first ones to do that at the Colonial? It would be awesome. It'd be unbelievable.
Yeah. And not even on that side of it, you know, just to build your name, but also too, you'd get to know the guys a little, not necessarily personally wise, but you'd get to know them, you know, how they compete, what their thought process is under pressure. So that would, you know, going back to that, would allow other people to start liking the other players more based on either some stuff they said, a funny joke they made, you know, because even the tour events I've been at, it surprised me at how, you know, how laid back and how many jokes like the players would make. You know, like I remember one time, it was actually a 2007 PGA when Tiger shot that 63. VJ hit it left on a hole, and he was in some deep rough, and he made some joke about how his lie was so shitty or something like that, and like everyone in the crowd laughed, and I was like, you know, VJ's known for being, you know, a stickler, you know, hard worker, you know, straight to the bones kind of guy. And he's out there just cracking jokes, made the crowd laugh, you know. And so I think that a lot of people don't get to see that side of it. And that would help grow the game, too. And also, you know, from someone like us who want to grow our games and make our games better, you know, if we hear player caddy interaction or what a player's thought process is going into a shot, It might help us. It might help other players out there with something in their game. Then all of a sudden, they save a couple strokes off their score. They go out and play golf one or two more times a week.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. That's what it's all about. By the way, just now, this is just released, Phil Mickelson has made some comments about the match and about future matches. So before we get out of here, let's kind of touch on this. So Mickelson did an interview with the Los Angeles Times that was released just a few minutes ago. And basically, this is what he had to say. He said, "What if Tiger and I were to team up and take on two younger players? Or what if we were to team up with younger players and have it be real high-level golf competition? I think there's a market for that." He said, "But you have to have some personality in there too." So a guy like JT showed how funny he is, and he would add a lot to an event like that. And then he goes on to say, "I think you could showcase guys like Steph Curry and Michael Jordan, Tony Romo, Patrick Mahomes," which is a name we missed. I didn't realize he was a golfer. Says he's a good golfer, elite talents, and have great personalities. Those personalities are going to come out with this event. Or you could have someone who loves the game and is competitive but is really entertaining, like Larry David and Bill Murray. I think that could shine." So that's even Phil right there looking ahead to future matches. You know, Phil, by the time this podcast is out, basically, he's going to be Champions Tour eligible. Not really. A couple weeks, he'll be Champions Tour eligible, and he's looking forward to doing these. This was a lot of fun, and hopefully we get more of it because it was great. And, I mean, there Phil is saying, "Hey, let's do it again. Let's find ways to make this fun for everybody and keep it rolling." So, yeah, I think Phil and Tiger versus two young guys would be fun.
Yeah, it would. And you know, we had saw that the week before with the driving relief, and you know, unfortunately the coverage kind of diluted some of it.
Yeah,
it was a dud. You know, so I think that's kind of what ruined it. But yeah, there's definitely a market for the high competitive golf. The reason that we had brought up a lot of these, the reason me particularly brought up a lot of these other sports was a couple of reasons. One, it came out yesterday that the match was the highest viewed cable golf. This is not majors, not anything on CBS, you know, any major NBC news station, nothing like that, but highest watched cable event. And
5.8 million viewers at average throughout the broadcast.
Yes. And so for me, looking back on that, it wouldn't have gotten that if it was just four golfers, in my opinion. You know,
I don't think it would have either.
You know, obviously Brady and Manning are real polarizing names too. So it's not necessarily that you just got to grab someone out of a different sport. You know, you got to grab someone from good sport. But what it does for me is it kind of brings it all around circle, because then, you know, how many football, you know, people that watch football who don't watch golf watch the match and, you know, saw Brady or Manning out there, and, you know, maybe they want to go give it a try, or they played golf when they were younger and didn't want to. So now they go out there because they see, you know, a different sport that they liked. They saw their athlete do it, because that's the great thing about golf is that, you know, every sporting level can play it. You can play it till you're 85, 90 years old, you know, so that, or essentially till you can't walk. And so, you know, I think that just opens the doors to grow the game more than it needs, you know, not more than it needs to, but grows it where it needs to be, you know, because they show the love, that, you know, because like we've seen, you know, Brady and Manning, you know, how much they love it. You know, we hear about all these different athletes talk about how, man, I hit a baseball 500 feet or whatever, and I can't hit this golf ball that's sitting still, you know, and how angry people get because it's so different than all the other sports. And so I think that's what kind of brings it around full circle. And as us golf fans, I would love to see four great golfers go in matches like that, or like we talked about. Maybe
you wouldn't get as much general public, though.
You would not get as much general public, and it wouldn't, I don't think it would allow the game to spread to the other outlets that it needs to.
You know who else might be good? Did you see that Topgolf video a while back of Mike Trout just cranking one over the back net?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I don't know what his short game's like, yep. But... put Mike Trout on the course. Dude hits it a mile.
Dude, yeah, put him out there. Even if they're not, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want a really good athlete who's never picked up a golf club before to go do it. You don't right. want him to shoot 195 or whatever. But, you know, someone who is a big name, you know, pretty decent player. You know, a lot of these guys have played in the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach, so they already have a little bit of tournament experience in there. And, I mean, I think there's – Like Phil just said right there, there's a market for it. I mean, you know, even when there's, even when sports do come back, I think that there's going to be people who want to see it. And we didn't get into this. I want to get into this before we get out.
Well, you know, I was about to say two words. I think I know where you're going here. Go for it. Cypress Point.
Exactly. Yep. You nailed it. Cypress would be, yeah, we're talking about the courses that the matches could be potentially played at. Yes. So Cypress Point is probably T1 with Pine Valley for courses I would like to see on this. This is what I am doing. Whenever I do this, kind of listing off these courses, I am eliminating any courses that have held a major championship within the last probably 15 or 20 years.
Or
are going to. You know, like, for example, Los Angeles Country Club is one of the best golf courses in the country, but they're hosting the U.S. Open or something like that, I believe, in 2024 or 3, something. So it's coming up, so that's not something necessarily. But, you know, like Seminole doesn't host anything like that, so we just saw that.
Bandon Dunes up in Oregon?
Bandon Dunes.
Real famous course.
Pacific Dunes, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
They have all kinds of fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was on the list here. I looked at some of these courses last night on Google Earth. National Golf Links of America is up by is pretty much right next to Shinnecock Hills.
Okay,
it's a top 10 or 15 course in the country, top 10 at least. And I looked on it; looks fabulous from all the things I've seen. One of the more famous golf courses in the world that doesn't get a lot of publicity is Sand Hills in Nebraska. It was built by Ben Crenshaw. It's top 15 course in the probably in the world, and it is it's just fabulous. True, it's real link style. It's out BFE of Nebraska. Can't, you know, like you zoom in on it and it's just goat pastures all around. So I mean, I don't know how to get there. I'm sure you gotta go on some back roads to find it. Fisher's Island Club, which is up in Fisher's Island, which is off of it's technically New York, but it's kind of by it's an island kind of by Rhode Island, New Jersey,
okay.
That area up in there, Connecticut. So it's a little bit north, but for anyone who hasn't looked up Fisher's Island Club, I would Google it and just look at some of the images it's a coastline type course. It's because it's on an island and it looks extremely fascinating to me. A lot of the holes look really short, so that's probably another reason why
you aren't kidding. This thing is like on the edge of the island.
It is, yeah. It is literally right there. It is immaculate looking. Really, another really good course, Perry Maxwell Design Crystal Downs is up in Michigan. I would really like to see it up there. Colby had already mentioned Pacific Dunes, Bandon Dunes. I have a friend who played out here, but I've never got to see it. Chicago Golf Club is another really good name. Friar's Head, I'd have to look up where that one is, but I've heard really good things there. I can't remember off the top of my head. We've already seen Shadow Creek. And two other courses I'd like to see before we get out of here. One is Prairie Dunes up in Kansas, Perry Maxwell Design.
Yeah, that was hosted the NCAA Championships in 14.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep, they've held that, and they held the Transmiss there a couple years ago as well. So I think that would be an awesome course to see these guys play at. And then I guess this might not fit into my list because I think they held a U.S. amateur, but the Elotion Club over in Arkansas is a top 30, 35 course, and it's fairly new. I believe it's a Fazio design, and it's just immaculate for everything that I've seen. Just super, really, kind of like we mentioned with Seminole, just blends with the land, and you didn't manufacture too much. You know, just kind of you put the holes in the course to fit the layout of the land, which are, I mean, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. Some of the international courses, you know, there's I'm going to butcher their name, but it's Tia Z. I'm gonna look it up before we get out of here. It's a course in New Zealand. It's one of, I believe, Golf Digest ranked it as the number two international course in the world.
Yeah, that's impressive. I'm still blown away by this Fisher's Island Golf Club up north on the coast, just north of New York. This is pretty phenomenal here. I wonder, you know, obviously Southern gets its due. I'm just thinking locally, Southern gets its due. National would be really tough to get an amateur on and have an amateur play national. Karsten, you know, you could maybe get on Karsten.
Yeah,
Karsten will be fun. I mean, you can't host a big event at Karsten.
No, you can't.
Not enough room for people.
There'd be some re-teeing from the amateurs out there for sure.
Oh yeah, we'd be teeing them. I think they've got like black, orange, white tees. We'd have them at like the white tees.
We'd have middle of the fairway essentially teeing up. But the New Zealand course I was talking about is a Tara ET. For anyone who hasn't looked it up, I strongly suggest you do.
How do you spell that? Googling now.
It's T-A-R-A. And then, space, and then IT.
Golf, yeah.
Then
it autofilled.
Autofilled, there it is. Yeah, like I said, it was built in, I want to say 2010 or 11, maybe even later than that.
God, look at this place.
Isn't it gorgeous? It's
unbelievable. It's Google this, everybody. Tara ET, T-A-R-A-I-T-I.
And we also, on our social media pages, we post a lot of pictures from these courses as well, so that's another reason to go follow everything we got. I'm trying to look up when this course was built, because it's very new.
I mean, this is unreal. This sits right on the water. The bunkering and the dunes on this course is, I mean, second to none.
And there's
this is incredible.
Yeah, there's a YouTube video. It's titled Every Hole at Tara ET Golf Club in Magna Y, New Zealand. And it's from Golf Digest. So if for anyone who wants to see it, strongly advise checking out. So and hopefully this will also show too, just that we see so many great golf courses, you know, obviously Augusta at major championships, but people just don't realize how great some of these other golf courses are around the world. And the ones we
don't see.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like we'd mentioned before, you go down to Tara ET, play this course, 18 holes, New Zealand, share some New Zealand culture. You know, I'm probably the definition of a novice at it, but I know a little bit about New Zealand. But, you know, you can spread the culture, you know, what their values are, you know, how their daily lives interact, you know, different from ours. And I think that would be just a great way to...
You know who's on the commentary if you go to New Zealand, right? Steven Adams. How is Steven Adams not on the commentary if you go to New Zealand?
Steven Adams.
Yeah, I don't know much about this game here, mate, but seemed pretty good there. Got it in the hole. He was about 100 yards away. That's what he'd say about Tom Brady's shot. Seems like that's pretty good, mate. You know, it's kind of like basketball. You get in the hole, and it's pretty good there, mate.
Well,
it's so good.
We talk about ways to improve golf coverage. I think that's the number one way right there, is get Steven Adams on the call.
Yes, absolutely.
But as we Oklahoma City Thunder fans know, you have to bleep out some of the things that Adam says.
Yes, but I would love to see him like standing next to Ricky Fowler interviewing him after a shot. Just because, I mean, the dude's he's a monster. I've stood next to him before. Makes you feel real, real small. And, you know, Ricky's about my size. So if Steven Adams stood next to Ricky, then, yeah, that makes for some good TV, I think.
Yeah, that is a good idea there. And, yeah, definitely New Zealand native. But, yeah, so anyone who hasn't, you know, just look up some of these names of these courses that we had mentioned earlier in the telecast and podcast, and you'll kind of see kind of why we want, you know, them to go to these different venues.
And we're huge course nerds, but even at home, you can just Google top 10 American golf courses, top 10 international golf courses, and just see what pops up. It's really pretty cool stuff. So yeah, really good stuff. A lot of fun this week. A lot of fun. What are we gonna do next week? We've only got one more week to kill before golf. Can you believe that?
It's flying by. We've been counting down for it for quite a while now. I mentioned earlier Friar's Head. It's another really good course in New York. I couldn't
New remember York, if it was okay.
New York.
Man, New York's got a lot of great golf.
It does, and they're all just kind of there's National Golf League, Shinnecock Hills, and another one we hadn't mentioned. It's a really nice course. It's Seven Neck Golf Course or something like that. They're all within about 5 miles of each other. I mean, they're literally just all in the same group of land.
It's
like
incredible.
It's essentially like 54-hole course, but they're in this, you know, divided by a road or something.
Can you imagine?
Know?
I mean, there've got to be some people up there who are just like mega loaded and they're members at all three. And they just rotate playing all three.
Oh, yeah. When I was looking at Google Earth, it's one of the things, too, that's good about Google Earth, too, is, you know, because me being a golf nerd, you can, like, zoom in and you see where, like, the nursery greens are for all these really nice courses, you know, like where, like, the maintenance barns are and stuff like that, you know, where it's, like, it's really weird, but it's so cool because it's, like, you know, and you look around too, and it's like for example, I was looking at Pine Valley the other day, and like you scroll out, and you know, it just looks like a town right around there, you know. So it's like one of the most glorious pieces of property in the world is surrounded by, you know, not much. You know, we talked about Southern Hills, how it's in the middle of Tulsa, you know, too. And so that's one of the fascinating things I find is just what's around there, and how the little things like the nursery green and where the maintenance barn is. I think stuff like that's really really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. Get down to Bushwood. Make sure you get signed up for the Ouachita Valley. Seriously, you do not want to be listening to this podcast whenever we get done playing the event and we're talking about how much fun we had and you weren't there. So get down to Bushwood in Chickasha. Tell Max that the 73rd hole sent you. We can't wait to see you down there over July 4th weekend for the Ouachita Valley Golf Tournament, the oldest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're back next week, the last week without golf, with more here on the 73rd hole.